Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, and welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, and this is the first episode of 2017. We've made it. I heard no cheers, no applause. We've made it. Thank you, David. And it's only appropriate to kind of light a candle. I don't mean in the sense of a vigil, but light a candle to kind of just start off the new year with the lovely men of keepbk.com. And let's talk about Keep, K-E-A-P, because it's a street here not too far from Roberta's in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and that's where Stephen and Harry met each other. Well, they met prior, but that's where this project fully formed. So let's talk about how you guys transitioned from Google Analytics and statistical data to making candles.
Sure, I'll go ahead and take that one. So, yeah, Harry and I, as you just alluded to, we worked previously at Google and actually both in Europe before moving to New York, and Keep Street came upon us as we both moved in the same month to the city of New York, and were faced with that same problem of, you know, where to live, and at the time, and probably as it still is, Williamsburg was all the rage. So we started looking around there and found this cozy little place on Keep Street, and that was where we became roommates and where we would begin to sort of plot ideas after work late into the evening about what we might do in our futures.
But I mean, what begat what? Was it you living together that started the conversation in the candles, or was it your, you know, love of candles that you guys professed that said, well, we should be roommates?
So we first became roommates because we appreciated each other as human beings rather than being about candles. Candles sort of came afterwards, where we realized that we had a candle problem, both of us, that we couldn't have enough candles, that if we ran out of candles, it was a bit of a crisis. And I think it went in that order, sort of, that we discovered this shared passion for this object, and it went from there.
So while you were at Google, you were doing a lot of data strategy with bigger brands, L'Oreal and Unilever. And in seeing those brands, which have a vast amount of products underneath that umbrella, it was more companies like Everlane, Warby Parker, these very singular things that you were more fascinated about.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. We had been seen a lot of these newer brands that were just focusing, I think, on simple offerings. There'd been sort of more and more complexity in terms of just the offerings that some of these sort of older companies were beginning to have, and I think we saw things that we appreciated in their simplicity, often in their attention to sort of quality and detail, and then often sort of a more modern mission that went beyond just selling a product to actually, you know, thinking a bit more about the world around us and sort of the impact that these companies were having. So we certainly, you know, were inspired by what we saw other people doing in other areas.
Yeah, and I mean, you're on the subway and you see the Casper mattresses ads, and you're like, that's quirky, that's cute. It has some personality to it. Mise en Knife as well. What was the personality behind Keep? What was going to make it different than the, over $2 billion candle market that exists today?
I think it was driven in large part by sort of our personalities, and we're both sort of I think it's sort of cliche to say this in Brooklyn, but anti-conventionalists, and we weren't really keen on sort of the big corporate way of doing things, and we wanted just to make a the kind of company that we would feel not just happy to work for, but be happy to give our money to for in exchange for a product. And so that meant doing things in a way that was thoughtful, that actually genuinely cared about the environment, that cared about its community, that cared about its employees, and that also had a personality, a soul, that was and a sort of humanity to it, as opposed to being something that's, you know, a chain that you see on the highway all the time and it's always the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, with that, some of the ingredients are very kind of eco-friendly focused. I was looking back at the history of candle making a little bit, and I grew up in Westchester, New York. And at Van Cortlandt Manor in Croydon-on-Hudson, you used to be able to make candles with rendered animal fat. I've seen instances of beeswax, though that's quite expensive to actually make a whole candle out of. Some kind of whale fat or cholesterol that yeah. You scrapped all those, and paraffin, you know, which is from petroleum refinery.
Yep.
But you scrapped all those and went straight to California for your main ingredient.
Yeah. So we work with a coconut wax, and sort of our journey to that decision was one just of really like asking questions and learning as we went. So we started knowing that the candles we you know were burning all the time were either tended to be soy, but you know sometimes were paraffin. And so we sort of looked into why those were the preference. And we found the main thing was really just that they were cheap. They were cheap and plentiful. And going a step beyond that, behind that, it's because they were byproducts of larger industries. The soy industry is a huge industry here in the US. And obviously the oil industry needs no introduction. So we then began asking questions and looking into these industries and realized that both from the industry, but also the products themselves, they weren't necessarily best suited to burning in your home. And that led us on this journey of looking into other waxes. So we actually experimented with a wax that you can actually get from rice called rice bran wax, which comes from the husk of the rice plant. We tried different waxes from leaves in different plants like carnauba wax, cantalila wax. We're just trying, you know, all these different sort of concoctions of wax to see something, and then we found a Californian-based company who worked with us on a coconut wax. So,
yeah. I love on your website you kind of quote yourselves by saying if you wouldn't eat it or put it in your body, why would you want to burn it in your home? And you know, people may question why I have candle makers on today, aside from you know the history in animal fat, but it's the kind of scent memories, the things that you evoke that I was most drawn by. I happened to walk by a shop that you were displaying your candles at in Chinatown, and there was one, you know, called Green Market. And it was like, you know, a weekend walking by and picking up your fresh fruits and herbs and vegetables at a green market when you put that up to your nose. Why these specific scents, and what do they evoke for you?
So our scents, we based our scents on things that we heard, you know, people we knew asking for. We actually spent a lot of time asking people, why do you burn candles, and particularly why do you burn scented candles? And we would hear people talking about wanting to escape from often their small New York-based apartments and have that moment of sort of respite. And this tendency to now sort of seek more natural settings or things that really would take people back to memories and places. So we sort of working with that big idea began to talk about our own memories and places that we like to escape to, and particularly that where scent was a strong aspect of that. So Green Market came up as one, you know, that idea of it's the weekend and you finally don't have anything to do except for finally enjoy nature, enjoy smell, enjoy food. And you wander around the Green Market and, you know, can actually take the time to smell each tomato and sort of pick your favorite one. So, you know, that was a key memory for us in both, I guess, our lives and similarly across the other scents. We sort of discovered that through that process.
Yeah, I mean, in finding out a little bit about your lives, I was wondering whether or not there are going to be candles that are, you know, British, or invoked of, you know, English tea and you know, like you were telling me, very high-fat butter on toast, this yellowish butter on toast. And then, you know, Harry, you grew up, I mean, all throughout Europe, but in Paris. Tell me about this tart that I know is kind of like a cheese, sometimes ham tart. Like, I wonder what the difference between a flavor and a scent is in your mind.
Okay, so I'll cover the tart first. So I grew up my first 11 years in a tiny village in northern France near the Belgian border, and in that part of the country, they have one of their specialty cheeses is called maroilles, which is known for being a really smelly cheese. It's if you know raclette, which is the cheese that you kind of cook communally, it's sort of a bit like that, but much stronger and a bit more feet smelly.
I love that description for food. It's a little feet smelly. You're going to enjoy it.
It's definitely a bit of an acquired taste, and people in the north go crazy about it, and other parts of France are not necessarily quite as crazy about it. And a lot of people have trouble eating it just on its own. I mean, a lot of French people, just it's too much for them. But in the north, it's quite funny. They, for breakfast, will dip that cheese into coffee, which I remember as a kid. When you're a kid, you don't really like coffee. And the idea of that super strong cheese into coffee, that was a pretty gross idea. But that's just kind of how much people love it there. But they make this tart that's a bit more democratic in its appeal because it kind of softens the cheese, softens the sort of feet aspect of it. And it's a bit like a quiche. And there's a few variations of it, but it's quite light. You generally have it with a green salad, and it can be kind of a light meal, so it's very different use of that ingredient. But that was definitely sort of the local staple when you thought of what's our specialty in our part of the world. It was tarte maroilles was the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, you almost answered that second question, is like, what's the difference between scent and flavor? And it feels like that might not be a good subject for a candle. To light one of, like that tart on fire.
Sometimes you don't want your room to smell like your food.
Yeah. But I mean, again, these evoked scents. One of my favorite ones that really got me was the hot springs. Having been to Japan and, you know, in a couple onsen, I never even thought about how much yuzu is in the baths and all around. It just feels like the smell of an onsen, but you know, really breaking it down, seeing the ingredients that you have and the perfumes that you have in your candles makes you realize that there are so many components to, you know, being in those hot springs or being in a space.
And that how much thought has gone into creating that atmosphere from, you know, the people who are running the onsen, and that it's, in most cases, a really long tradition that kind of got to that point. So we're really lucky. We work with an amazing perfumer who also happened to have been to Japan, spent a lot of time in Japan, and so who kind of immediately knew what we were talking about, and it was very easy to explain the concept, and he knew exactly where to get all the ingredients and make it work.
Then there's Wood Cabin, which is perfect for this time of season. Talk to me about your kind of idyllic moment around either wood fire, hearth, or, you know, campfire. I mean, what does that mean to you, both olfactory, you know, at the same time, what would you be eating?
From a smell sense, I think my memory of actually wood cabins is somewhere probably not that familiar to people here, which is the Isle of Skye in Scotland, which is where my mother's from. And they still burn peat fires there. And you know, obviously, those smoky flavors, aspects of whiskey too, that sort of are still distilled up there in the Highlands. So then, you know, in combination with that, some of the stranger Scottish foods. I was brought up on haggis, and some of those things that you can hardly believe people eat, like blood pudding. My mother loves blood pudding, or black pudding, which is blood pudding. quite intense mixture of smells and tastes when I think about sort of my most familiar cabins.
Yeah, I mean, now knowing about the Isle of Skye, I can see why you use the glass that you do for your candles, and they can also be used as tumblers afterwards, because you might need that drink.
So the candles clean out easily, and the labels have no residue, so our glasses can be used afterwards, and we were thinking about that sort of overall, almost like the ritual that you might have around various things, and how, you know, it starts with lighting a candle, but it might end, you know, a few months later with finishing it and having that well-deserved drink after you've sort of enjoyed the many months of pleasure.
Excellent. On that, we're going to take a quick break and come back and burn another one down. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan-Turkel. We are today with Stephen Tracy and Harry Duell of KeepBK.com, and that's Keep Candles. And I kind of want to follow up on what you said, Stephen, about ritual. Because it's about ritual of something so simple as lighting and burning a candle. And you found that very similar to, you know, mastering a craft like bread baking and brewing coffee and how those have grown into, you know, billion-dollar industries too. But they've grown into these very beautiful craft and artisan things. How do you work in something so singular like that? What are the questions you ask yourself and you know, how do you make that product better?
I've always been actually drawn to industries that take something that seems inherently simple, but then sort of keep obsessing about making it just fractionally better, because I think in the long run it does lead to a better product. And so I think, you know, like coffee and bread baking and candles are similar in that they all have a simple set of ingredients that sort of come together to make the thing. But, you know, as we've all experienced, there's, you know, huge variety in terms of the end product that you can get. So I think candles have probably been taken to less of an extreme so far than like maybe coffee or sort of like our baked goods. But I think there's just as much room to keep, especially on when you factor in scent, which is just, you know, the billions of scents that you can create with all the things that are available to perfumers nowadays. The sort of we have to sometimes stop ourselves, I think, from not going down the road of creating hundreds of different scents, because there's just so much opportunity to play and finesse and tweak.
I want to talk about one of your other candles, Waves, and in that, you know, how you kind of refine the idea of what scents go into a candle. Because that one's a little more poetic than the others. I don't know which one of you told me, but Provincetown at the end of, you know, summer in Cape Cod, you know, when the crowds leave and nature remains and it's the last warm days of summer. The others have almost punchier notes to me. Like, you have the yuzu in the baths, you have those crisp leaves and wood fire, but this is like this very ephemeral thing, and we all know it. Like, I can picture it and I can smell it right now, but what is it actually comprised of when you go to a perfumer and say, these are the, you know, notes that I need?
Sure. It's marine fragrances are tricky, because that smell of water is hard to, we can't just put water in a bottle and have it smell, you know, like a fragrance. So the perfumers use a variety of tricks to sort of simulate that effect, and they basically, what it comes down to is taking the watery part of a cucumber, the watery part of a melon, because each, that melon has many facets, and you have sort of the sweet part of the melon, the kind of outside, more rindy part of the melon, and you have the watery part of it, which actually between a cucumber and a melon, that watery aspect, it smells quite similar. So they sort of bring those things together, and then with Waves, we really want it to be the sea, and sort of the image we had in our eyes, in our minds, was lying down in the sea, sort of looking at the sky. And for that, we added a few more notes, like star anise, which brings a little bit of that almost a tiny bit of licorice-y feeling. You can't really smell licorice when you smell the fragrance, but when you know it's there, you see kind of what it's doing. We have some sort of white woods, some sea salt, a bit of seaweed. At the beginning, we had too much seaweed while we were working on it, and it smelled a bit like dead fish. but I'm happy to say that it does not smell like dead fish currently.
But for those people that are into that smell, I'm sure you can make a limited edition of more seaweed.
We might make a dead fish candle.
You know, it's fascinating hearing the spices and ingredients that you put in. Has candle making made you a better cook?
I'll say that I think thinking about scent, and you were asking earlier about scent and flavor, and I was going to get very scientific if I'd answer that question. And
please.
So discuss how much of flavor is really scent anyway, which I won't go into too much detail. But, you know, when you taste, you're really smelling much more so than actually tasting. And I think it's having an appreciation for scent is sort of this thing that we can all have, but often we just go through the day and don't think about what we're smelling and really take a moment. So I would say I've become more nose aware and actually use my nose more and enjoy smelling more. And it's sort of a fun thing to do, you know, actually to take the time to smell things and consider, can you spot aspects in the way your clothes smell or things that are familiar? Like, what is it? Like, what is that smell? Yeah. And I think that, you know, that transcends to cooking too.
You know, one thing that's kind of driven me nuts about the modern age of restaurants is how good HVAC is, you know, heating, ventilation, air conditioning. And those hoods just suck up so much, you know, vapor and smoke that you lose a lot of scent at restaurants. And then, you know, thinking about walking into a known scent, I know exactly what that smells like and I can recreate that so easily. But when you walk into your favorite establishment, do you feel like you smell in the same way that, you know, you taste? Do you feel like the I hate to call it odor, but you know, that olfactory experience is there?
It's definitely become way more important to me over the past few years. If a place smells sort of bad to me, I guess I'm like really, I kind of lose my appetite, whereas it didn't used to bother me. But it also is more part of the, generally I find that restaurants, you don't necessarily smell the food, or it's maybe a mishmash of the food. But for example, Roberta's, where we're recording right now, it doesn't smell like pizza, and it smells a bit like a wood cottage with sort of melted cheese. It's very alpine almost, and I think that creates this atmosphere that right now in winter is really makes you want to get cozy and sit down. And I've become more aware of that, Steve.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point you make about the choice to remove smell from a cooking environment, and whether that was done with intention of affecting the eating experience, because I think it does. Like, I think when the scent is present, it probably does almost like heighten the enjoyment of the food because you're surrounded by the smell of it cooking. But maybe, you know, people don't want to leave smelling of the food, and we certainly leave the candle studio every day smelling of candles, so there's, you know, that's the drawback of,
so you guys are not like the best guys to sit next to on a train, rather than that stink train that happens every once in a while. You guys smell like candles.
I've actually been identified on the subway by someone who knew me because they smelled me down the other end of the carriage.
You're the guy that smells really good on the subway.
Is it any specific candle, or is it like a mishmash of all things happening at once?
I think Green Market, actually, it has, we didn't talk about this, some of the elements in there, but there's actually a lot of fresh herbs, it's my British, fresh herbs in there, really, they are scents that tend to stick to a bit more. So like there's basil, mint, cilantro are some of the things in there. And so you kind of leave smelling like you've sort of been rolling around in a herb garden.
You should have that experience, you know. You should have people come over to Keep and say, well, you could smell the candle, or you could just roll around in our herb garden. It's the same thing. Wouldn't you rather buy
her candle?
I would absolutely pay for that. You know, and going back to those herbs, there are so many recipes that have, you know, these significant notes of you know, basil, etc. And I think, you know, Harry was telling me about living in Rome for a little bit. And it's the meals of mozzarella, the buffalo, mm-hmm. and having gnocchi alla Sorrentino. And, you know, that has prosciutto, and that has basil, and I believe it has, what, tomato or some kind of...
Gnocchi alla Sorrentino.
Yeah.
It's no prosciutto. It's mozzarella. It's very simple. It's mozzarella, tomato, and basil, and gnocchi. And it's four ingredients, basically, and olive oil. And I feel that was kind of what was amazing about cuisine in Rome, was that basically every day there were sort of six ingredients that we just sort of mixed and matched together, and that's kind of all we ate, and it was not boring somehow.
Yeah. I mean, will you ever go into the kitsch of making candles that are that recipe?
Probably not.
But you get asked that all the time. I mean, what do people suggest to you for your next scent?
Well, we certainly got a lot of festive ones just, you know, in the past few months, but I think looking beyond those and realizing that next festive season there's some opportunity there for those sorts of things. We actually, things with edible elements definitely come in. We had a lot of things around figs and berries and things like that, which I think, you know, particularly in sort of New York apartments, those sort of fresher, cleaner scents work really, really well. But and where you might live and sleep and do everything in one room, you need a scent that can work across everything you might be doing in there, which, you know, obviously when you have your five-story house somewhere else, like, you can be a bit more creative across the rooms with how things might smell.
Yeah, and I think we've sort of set this expectation of these escapes that are not mono-ingredient and that are complex, but that really... You know, when you smell wood cabin, when you're told about wood cabin, you smell it, people are generally like, oh, yeah, yep, that's wood cabin. So I think people are kind of looking to us for, we've heard, for what are the next escapes? And so it's kind of an exciting thing that we're going to launch in the next 2-3 months.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you're going to do rock cled and opry ski at the house, light a wood cabin. If you're going to, you know, make donabe and then Japanese food, you should light the hot springs, you know. If you're going to picnic, not that you carry a candle outside with you, but maybe waves.
Yeah, they're definitely appropriate for different occasions, for sure.
Are there specific meals that you've cooked with any specific candle that you can say is a great pairing?
I personally use Green Market while cooking, after cooking, because of those fresh elements in it. It helps. I live in a studio, you know, that one room that I was alluding to before that does all functions, and I actually have a pet peeve around, particularly if you're roasting or frying something and then the oils, you know, fly off into the air and next thing you know everything smells of salmon or and Green Market with some of those fresh elements helps to cut through some of that apartment smell that can come from cooking. So that's my personal
one. Yeah, I agree. I think for the kitchen, it has this nice aspect of also feeling appropriate, that when your kitchen smells like Green Market, it's like a really good-smelling kitchen. But it's still a kitchen. It's not something else.
Yeah, and I'm going to change your life right now about cooking fish in a small, closed apartment. Please in do. Papio. That means in paper. That, because for so long, I also had that same problem where I love cooking fish but didn't want to because of how it... you know, emanated, and how it just resided in the walls for so long, and no candle could really cover it up. But, and Papio has changed that for me. Or broiling, like a 2-minute broil versus, you know, cooking on the stovetop for, you know, 10 minutes really changes the dynamic. But now that I know I can just light a Green Market candle and do all the cooking on the range that I want, you've changed my life. Well, thank you both, Stephen, Harry. And
thank you.
You know, everyone should start their new year by checking out Keep. That's KEAPBK.com. And, you know, maybe buying a Green Market candle to cover up whatever you just cooked in your kitchen. But also experience hot spring waves and wood cabin. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. A big thank you to Corin for sponsoring. Music by Cookies and David for engineering. Cheers.
for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.